We have reached a verdict already. We all just kind of looked at each other and nodded. We find the defendant guilty of charges.
Weight 105?
Yeah,
in your bra.
Your Honor, I object.
You would.
Bastard!
Hey! Quiet!
Whether it's race judicata or stare decisis, there is no basis for imposing some draconian policy with regard to bail, nunc pro tunc.
Your Honor, the defense is now just making up words.
We came into your trial. Oh, look how cute. There's like a judge and everything. And jury people.
Vote for Al!
Ladies.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 213. I'm Thomas Smith, that's Andrew Torres, and gee, Zachary Truwelliger, what a clown horn of a week. That's all I got. How's it going?
I'm on the mend. I still have that kind of throaty, husky coffee thing that Brian is going to love editing out.
Yeah, but Brian had to edit around a lot of like syphilis the last few episodes on Andrew's part.
I want to be clear. It's just like the flu or something.
Sure. We practice safe and hygienic podcasting here, yeah. But with the help of Brian.
Yep.
Yeah. oh man, what a nightmare. Okay, pre-show announcements. the world is a dumpster fire. Yeah, it's wow, we got a lot to talk about. It is unfortunate that the testimony and stuff, it's happening on Thursday later than we can even record, and Andrew is traveling. So we're not able to do like a rapid response to the testimony, unfortunately. Sorry about that, but we've got plenty to talk about regardless about Kavanaugh, and then we'll see, you know, if the world blows up, we'll see if we can do some sort of emergency podcast, maybe. We're not sure, but we got plenty to talk about, so it's it's not like we're gonna be, you know, Andrew's gonna be short of content or anything. It's unfortunately the schedule worked out, so we can't exactly do a response, but you got that rapid response Tuesday. That was kind of a bonus rapid response, so hopefully that helps you out. And then I mentioned QED last time, and I had mentioned like, oh, maybe do a hangout or something like that. Well, Marsh, who's the person I'm talking to in coordination, one of the people who's running QED, he messaged me and said that even if you don't have tickets for QED, even if you're not an attendee or anything, the Friday night event, so that's October 12th in Manchester, those events are free regardless of whether or not you have a ticket or anything. So I know QED is sold out. It's kind of tough. It's an incredible conference, and they sold out very quickly. And so that's unfortunate, but it's good news. Instead of like some sort of meetup, it sounds like it'll work perfectly to have the Friday night events. They're at the QED Hotel. So it's the hotel where the event is. So check out, just Google QED, QED Manchester, and it'll come up. So those Friday night events are free. You don't need a QED ticket. So if you want to hang out with me and probably a bunch of other much cooler people, that's where we can do a little hangout if you are anywhere near the Manchester area. And I think it's not just Friday night too. There's events most of Friday. And again, they're all free and open to everybody. So that'll be how we do that. I'm looking forward to it. I got definitely got a few messages from people who were asking about the hangout thing. So that's what we'll do. Seems perfect to me. Looking forward to it. And with that said, let's get to the dumpster fire clown horn. Gee, Zachary Truwelliger.
That's awesome, though, that there are free events. And I remain super jealous of our listeners who will get to hang out with you in Manchester. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks. And I'm jealous of the people who get to see your debate coming up. That's also going to be amazing. And I'm excited that we can get that as an episode. And by the way, incidentally, one of my QED presentations is going to be an episode of SIO. So there you go. If you can't make it to either of our things that we're doing, you'll be able to listen later on. All right, you ready to clown horn this, Kavanaugh?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, let's pile into the Volkswagen and start honking the horn, man.
And we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen.
And I love all people, rich, but in those particular positions, I just don't want a poor person. Does that make sense?
I won't go any more than that because you're Boy Scouts, so I'm not going to tell you what it is.
America's so true.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Oh, man. Wow. So where do we start? The vote is scheduled because, you know, as much as Republicans are all about due process means don't interview or subpoena people that are witnesses and don't care. As Lindsey Graham has said, he doesn't care what anybody says. Doesn't matter what the testimony is. They're still going to vote and he's going to vote yes, no matter what. So that's what due process means to Republicans. Talk about that vote, I guess, Andrew, for Friday.
Yeah, so we both saw the news on that. And what that means is that takes us out of the realm of having a legal remedy here. Just as a sidebar, somebody tweeted at us that Jeff Merkley said that he was going to sue to block the pro- that's not going to happen. Okay, I mean, he may file a lawsuit, but there's nothing, right? Advise and consent of the Senate is something that the Senate gets to define what that counts as, and they are following their existing rules. So, you know, there's nothing that's going to happen there. So, you know, the question is, will Republican senators pay a price for this politically? And I've done some digging on that, and the answer might be yes. Right. So, let's talk about the baseline of where Kavanaugh was polling prior to these accusations. And keep in mind that this is, you know, in a more politicized environment, but prior to any of Dr. Ford's or any of these subsequent sexual harassment allegations that have come out, he was polling at a plus five, a net plus five in terms of
with everybody, not just Republicans. That's
right.
Everybody.
Yeah. You know, and that's like 99-1 among Republicans and right, the number necessary to get him down to plus five among everyone else. And I want to point out, right, that is so 538 gave it a little bit of a sensationalist headline with, you know, that is the lowest polling of any nominee, you know, modern nominee since polling, you know, was really taken on these kinds of issues. To me, the significant point is that's 7 points below Neil Gorsuch, right? So you can say we are in a period now where the nominees are more polarized, where you expect those numbers to trend more towards, you know, closer to zero, but Gorsuch was a plus 12. The other folks who were in the plus five area, Harriet Myers, whose nomination was withdrawn, was a plus six. Robert Bork was a plus six. And again, we know the fate of Robert Bork. He was voted down by the Senate Judiciary Committee and by the full Senate. Clarence Thomas, I don't know why I would compare Brett Kavanaugh to Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
He was a plus 35 during his confirmation hearings. So so that's where we started.
But are you comparing apples? So you were saying plus five. So he was plus 35. Clarence Thomas was before Anita Hill?
No. I mean, when confirmed, Clarence Thomas was a plus 35.
Okay.
So these are terrible numbers. And those are pre Dr. Ford's allegations. There have not been a lot of kind of instant polling, and instant polling is sort of tougher to, you know, match methodologically. 538 is good with that. Their best estimate is that Kavanaugh has dropped 4 to 6 points since then, and, you know, may be dropping further. So what that means is we are looking at potentially four Republican senators, and with the appointment of John Kyle, who, by the way, has been a staunch Kavanaugh defender. He was advising Trump on Kavanaugh before being appointed to fill out John McCain's seat. So don't think that, you have any leeway or ability to make any headway with John Kyle. The four people to keep an eye on, obviously, we've talked about Susan Collins a lot. We have talked about Lisa Murkowski sort of obliquely. She has not had a lot to say throughout the Kavanaugh process. In addition to that, we have Jeff Flake, who is retiring, the other senator from Arizona, and Bob Corker, who is retiring, the senator from Tennessee. Both Flake and Corker have publicly said that they want Dr. Ford's allegations to get a full hearing. We don't know what that means. We don't know if that means that, you know, full hearing means, you know, 2 hours on Thursday, followed by a perfunctory vote on Friday, regardless of what she says. But those are the four to keep an eye on. And again, remember, you've got to flip two. It's what makes it tough. And but on the flip side, no pun intended. All you need at this point, right? All Democrats are asking for is slow down this rocket propelled train, right? Like that not, you know, we want a commitment to Flake voting against Kavanaugh. I think Flake would love somebody with Kavanaugh's record and history and accomplishments, you know, minus his personality on the Supreme Court, right? Like we are not asking for senators to vote against Kavanaugh on the merits, but just to postpone the vote until we know what's going on. And, you know, and then after that, then, you know, we figure out what happens after that when we figure out what happens after that. Right. But we're in a position where the opposition side is just saying we want to understand what's happening. And look, like that could present a challenge. It could present a challenge for people like Murkowski and Collins, who presumably would like to be reelected to the Senate. They're not up this cycle, but they will stand for reelection and presumably would like to continue holding their jobs. And it may strike at the conscience of somebody like a Flake or a Corker. That's what you're hanging your hat on at this point. I should add, I continue to see the, I guess we could call it conventional wisdom, that, you know, Republicans are going to pull the Kavanaugh nomination, nominate somebody else. Happy to do an Andrew was wrong on this. If I'm wrong, I don't think that is very likely. I don't think that is likely because of Trump's temperament, as we've discussed, and also because of the calendar. We are, as of this recording, we are 40 days out from the midterms, 98 from the next Senate session, and the average Supreme Court appointment has taken between 50 and 100 days to go through the full confirmation process. So, you know, it would be very, very difficult to pull the Kavanaugh nomination and follow the McConnell plan of cramming this guy through as quickly as possible.
Well,
in advance of the election.
Assume for a moment. I mean, this is a huge hypothetical, but assume Mitch McConnell is a supervillain bent only on evil and doesn't care about principles or process or anything.
Okay,
like
so assume weird, so assume facts that so try, are in evidence. Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's really hard. Just put your brain, I know it's like trying to conceive of the fourth dimension or something. Just imagine Mitch McConnell, but with no principles whatsoever and only wants to get right wing people to take away women's rights,
right,
and gay rights and stuff in the court. So if you, is your mind in that place?
It's a stretch, but I'm there.
Yeah. Now hypothetically, let's say something goes seriously wrong, you know, in terms of from the Republican standpoint, something goes wrong and like they have to nominate someone else, you know, Trump has to nominate someone else and do it. Physically, how fast, like, you know, sub 4 minute mile kind of thing, like physically, just how fast could they do it if they needed to?
So they could, right? I mean, you know, the theoretical answer to that question is, right, on Friday, they could roll out a new nominee, but there are other.
But like, is there any process reason that, because like advice and, going back to what you said in the beginning, advice and consent is advice and consent. Couldn't they just say, Trump nominates Amy Coney Barrett or whatever it is, we vote yes, and then just done. like in a day?
That's actually a more interesting question than I had initially thought, because it is clear under the Constitution that the Senate is required to hold some sort of hearing, right? So, you know, you couldn't do it in the same day, but, you know, you could make the nominee, you know, you could pull the nomination on Friday, announce a new person on Monday, take the vote on Tuesday. But even if they didn't hold the hearing, I don't know that you could get a court to rule, you know, to issue a writ of mandamus or an injunction requiring them to hold the hearing, right? Like, I think every court up to and including the Supreme Court would say, yeah, that's a political question. So, you know, from Trump land, right? Like, I stopped initially to answer that question as a lawyer and try and give you the correct mm-hmm. answer, which is that under advice and consent, that's always meant that there must be a hearing. But remember, in Trump world, it's not what does the law require? What does history, tradition, custom, practice, precedent require? But rather,
right, yeah.
What's the consequence for us if we don't do that? And I do not believe, I could be wrong on this, but I don't believe you could get a court to weigh in. You might get a district court to issue an injunction, but that would get an immediate expedited appeal all the way up the chain to the Supreme Court. This is kind of fanciful because
so the answer
I don't
is very
think,
fast. They could do yeah. it very fast, is what
yeah.
you're saying.
I don't think Mitch McConnell would try and do it in 3 days. And the reason is that that once
and the reason is because he has more days. He'll do it in whatever the
yes.
days are.
No, I think that's right. Look, like if they have to pivot, I do not believe that Mitch McConnell hasn't thought about what if they have to dump Kavanaugh, right? Like, what if somebody yeah. has, you know, a Polaroid picture at this point that contradicts his testimony, mm. right? Like that, somebody has the kind of evidence that even Republicans can't pretend doesn't exist, right? I am sure McConnell has thought about, okay, what do I have to do? What's my plan B if we have to dump this guy? But what I would say is, I think plan B carries some risk with it. I think when you're talking about yeah. that short span of time, the amount of time that you reduce the rollout process, for example, reduces your ability and the ability of Koch brother funded groups like the Judicial Crisis Network, which we're going to talk about in a second, to air ads on behalf of your candidate, right? Like it is, there is a serious war for public opinion. And, you know, if you try and roll somebody out, particularly if you were to try and roll out an Amy Coney Barrett, who, by the way, I think would not be next up. I think.
Oh,
that,
interesting.
Yeah. We'll go down that sidebar in a second.
Sure.
You lose the war over messaging, right? It's very, very difficult to win a messaging war when, you know, there's 6 seconds between the decision and the process. Why do I think it's not going to be Barrett, right? You know, okay, now they're scrambling and they're going to try and find a woman. Two things. Number one, she has been a federal judge for all of about 12 minutes. There is the highly likely risk that the ABA would rate her not qualified. I think that certainly could happen. And in addition, her statements on abortion are not the statements of somebody like Brett Kavanaugh, who's been practicing and preparing and auditioning for the Supreme Court for 10 yeah. years. Her statements have been designed to rile up and inflame and incite the base. And I don't see how Susan Collins could vote for Amy Coney Barrett. I think there are too many question marks around her. And again, I mean, it sort of goes back to our Kavanaugh prediction episode. I think the next two folks up would be either Raymond Kethledge, who was my bridesmaid pick way back when I predicted that it would be Kavanaugh. I said, if I'm going to be wrong, I think I'll be wrong that it will be Kethledge of the Sixth Circuit, or his colleague who is rumored to be the top choice of Mitch McConnell, Amul Thupar. Not somebody I know as well, not somebody whose record I have scoured, but if you're putting all the eggs in McConnell's basket, I would say you're looking at Kethledge or, and I said Thupar, but it's Thupar, you're looking at Kethledge or Thapar. I don't think it will be Barrett. I think Barrett would be difficult to confirm, particularly in a short period of time. But I still think that, you know, barring, and again, people are going to be listening to this episode after Thursday's testimony. So maybe that will change my mind.
We'll see if we can get to him
today,
earlier, but
I think they're not going to, they're not going to pull. Our buddy, Andrew Seidel, pointed us to a story being carried by the Huffington Post that the Judicial Crisis Network, which we mentioned earlier, and its president, Kerry Severino, have pulled their ad spend in favor of Brett Kavanaugh. And the headline says that, you know, they're not sure about backing Kavanaugh. When I dug into it, I'm going to read her quote and you tell me what you think. Quote, "I think we have to look into this further," Severino said when asked by MSNBC's Craig Melvin whether Kavanaugh should still be confirmed. "From what we know so far, we don't have corroboration yet. If the Senate votes on this soon, I think they would have to go on what they know so far. I know the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to look into this before they would move forward to a vote." So, you know, I take that as a little bit of hedging, but I do not take that as saying that, you know, JCN.
That was just saying things in a way that makes you not have an opinion.
Yep.
Is all.
Yep.
Ooh, I think if the defense is better than the offense, yep, then the defense will probably win. But if the offense has a good game and the defense doesn't, I think maybe the offense could carry the day.
That is exactly how I read that. I thought HuffPo was overplaying that. So, so there's kind of where we stand politically. And then you had a question that you and I hope our listeners appreciate how patiently you waited to bring this up.
I found this interesting. Just the mechanic. It's pretty much related to what you've already said, but a slight wrinkle, because the mechanics of actually moving past Kavanaugh are interesting, because knowing that Trump is a child who won't ever admit defeat, it's not as though the Senate can just force a new nominee. You know, like if McConnell comes back, if somehow all this stuff breaks through and, you know, Murkowski or somebody, there's a couple senators who tell McConnell, we're not doing it. McConnell goes to Trump and says, don't have the votes. Like, I don't know if Trump, like, hypothetically, Trump could just fold his arms and say, you know, no, just do it, you know, kind of thing. He has to get him to recognize that he's not going to win and pick somebody else, or Kavanaugh has to, like, back out on his own. And it's interesting to think about that aspect of it. Do you think is there anything there? Like, do you anticipate? I mean, what if Trump just won't admit defeat and then they actually have to do a vote and not have the votes? Could be catastrophic for them.
That certainly could happen. And it is that kind of dovetails with one of the more bizarre statements that I've seen from my buddy Nate Silver, where he says he thinks it's at least possible that McConnell is secretly hoping that he would lose the vote on Kavanaugh in order to be able to get. And that is, you know, that's crazy talk. There is no way. Right? McConnell's plan is to cram through a conservative court nominee. He does not care who that is. That has been the modus operandi since early 2016, when Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland. So, you know, that is totally implausible to me. But yes, from a constitutional perspective, it is the president who gets to nominate, and that nomination is valid until that person withdraws. Now, mind you, Kavanaugh could request that his name be withdrawn from confirmation, right?
I don't know if he's going to do that, because that's like admit. I think Kavanaugh sees that as admitting that everything is true. I really don't know. I mean, maybe Republicans would be able to pressure him to do it, but I don't know.
Balance that against, this is somebody who has been thinking about being on the Supreme Court every day of his life for the past 10 years. So, you know, if Mitch McConnell comes to you and goes, you know, this clown in the White House is not going to be there forever, ultimately, we're going to get you in. But if you know, have any hope of that ever happening, you better pull your name right now. That may have some persuasive ability. But again, it's up to Trump to name the next nominee. So you are 100% correct. I mean, you know, if I were McConnell gosh, we know Mitch McConnell listens to the show, so I don't know. I want to give him the advice, but you play to Trump's ego and you say, you pulling a guy and saying, you know, he's been the subject of a Democratic witch hunt, or I don't know, come up with a new metaphor, because the witch hunts seem to be catching a lot of witches. But, you know, it'd be a much bigger defeat for you if you lose votes on the floor than if you say you were being hounded unfairly by the Democrats. So, you know, you're going to have to change your course of action. That'd be how I'd go after Trump. But you're right from a procedural perspective. I'm not counting on it.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah. All right. Interesting. All right, so now what about an update on that lawsuit that, what was it, Kamala Harris and some other senators filed?
Yeah, filed by all the Democratic members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Blumenthal is the lead plaintiff. It is Blumenthal v. National Archives. I am going to upload the document that Pacer spits out at me, because a hearing was held a week ago on Friday with respect to the temporary restraining order that Blumenthal and the Democrats are seeking, forcing government agencies to cough up the records on Kavanaugh. The transcript has been entered, but is not available unless you want to pay the court reporter thousands of dollars to have it produced. Nobody has covered it. I don't know when the hearing on the TRO is going to be scheduled. The court has not entered a date. Blumenthal et al. Have filed their motion. They have filed their supporting briefs. The agencies, so the National Archives and the CIA, those are the two government agencies that have been sued. They have not yet responded. It is typical that you respond to motions for TRO with, opposition briefs. So we still don't know. Highly unlikely, but if you want to be sort of saved by the bell of a court doing something in this process, that could happen. The judge there is Randolph Moss. He was in the Clinton DOJ. He was with the Office of Legal Counsel, was appointed to the bench by Barack Obama.
Remind me, this is just to get the documents?
This is just to get Kavanaugh documents, right? So, but keep in mind, if you're the court, you're looking at this going, well, if I delay ruling on the TRO for a couple of days and they hold a vote, then granting access to the documents is meaningless. Yeah. So, that may spur the court to act. Keep your eyes open is all I can say. We don't know. I have tried everything I can, short of writing a check to a court reporter for thousands of dollars it may be redacted. The reason if it had the information, I would absolutely do it. But I might pay the court reporter and then only and then find that the it's crucial information has been blacked out. So we don't know. And that's out there.
So the legal courtroom equivalent of like the eagles in the Lord of the Rings movies, where they just come and save everybody at the end. Like, so that's still maybe out there. Possibly. Kind of. That's what you're saying.
I endorse the spirit, if not the full metaphor. Yeah. How about that?
It doesn't really. It's not going to save everything. It's just like the eagles will drop some leaflets. Right. It's like, here's a little bit more information as to why Mordor is so bad. And then that would
make Mordor great again. There we go.
Yeah. We've unlocked some of Sauron's additional documents. Boy, his emails show a really anti Hobbit rights person. Okay. All right. I'm done.
Yep.
Hey, listeners, did you know that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? Wait a minute. Looks at calendar. Uh-oh. Coming up on that soon. Well, if you're noticing a bald spot, if you're noticing a receding hairline, anything like that, it turns out there's actually something you can do about it. So the question is, why are so many men doing nothing or turning to weird solutions when there's actual medicine and science that can help you? If hair loss is something you're worried about, there is a solution. You can go to 4hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness products for men. And I want to emphasize, because this is very important to me, being a skeptical person, This is connecting you with real doctors and medical grade solutions to treat things like hair loss. This is absolutely not snake oil or woo or anything like that. These are prescription solutions that are doctor recommended. And the best thing about 4hims.com is they save you that visit to the doctor. No waiting room, none of that. Saves you time. All you have to do is answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review it and they can actually prescribe you medication. Whatever products you order are shipped directly to your door. There's more good news because if you order now, our listeners will get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/OA. That's FORHIMS.com/OA to take advantage of this deal and to actually do something if this is something you're worried about. That's 4hims.com/OA. All right. Well, now let's go to the fact that, oh my gosh, this situation. I think this is a real, it's kind of an analogy or a microcosm of what progress has looked like in the United States, because the Republican men on the Judiciary Committee, who it's still all white men from 1991, you know, two of them are the same, and to now, it's still all white men, but they want to do they want to look slightly better, so they're hiring a woman to do their job for them. And it's to me, it's such an example of the way progress goes, because at first you get this tokenistic, maybe kind of being a part of the thing, but there's still no Republican women in the Judiciary Committee. So I found that kind of frustrating. But talk about this person they're hiring to try to not look bad.
Yeah. So this is Rachel Mitchell. And I agree with your take 100%. This is unprecedented, and by that I mean I could not find a time in which the Senate Judiciary Committee has ever gone and hired a third party. And she is a career prosecutor. She was admitted to the bar in 1992 and became a prosecutor in 1993, started prosecuting sex crimes soon thereafter, and now oversees the Sex Crimes Domestic Violence Unit. So is qualified for the job for which they are asking her to do, but I have never seen a case in which the Senate Judiciary Committee has outsourced its asking of questions. That's just right. That's not what you do. I mean, we've talked about how, you know, the difference between some of the lawyer members of the committee versus the non-lawyer members in terms of follow-up questions, but asking the questions, that's the prerogative of the Senate. Nothing to be done about that.
That's legal, though. That's, constitutional for all we know
It is certainly within the discretion of the Senate to maintain its internal affairs, right? Again, same standard, right? If you were to sue to try and block this, and again, you couldn't because the people with standing would be Dr. Ford and Brett Kavanaugh, and both of them have consented to have Rachel Mitchell undertake the questioning.
Oh, okay.
I think your tokenism point is dead on, right? That we all know why they have done that. So here's what I was able to find out about Rachel Mitchell, other than her impeccable credentials. You want the good news or the bad news first?
Well, I was going to say, if she has worked in any capacity of prosecuting anyone for sex crimes at all, that already puts her to the left of 42 members of the Senate, just believing that any case of sexual assault or harassment or anything could be prosecutable. So that is right. I'm already surprised that they picked her. I would have thought they would pick the creationist equivalent of, someone who believes that there's no such thing as any prosecutable sex crime. I'm surprised.
Well,
but, so give me the bad good news, I guess.
The good news.
Know.
Okay, let's start with the good news. So you're exactly right. Funny you use the word creationist. We'll get back to that.
Oh, great.
But I want to read two quotations from an interview that that Rachel Mitchell gave. Well, I'll tell you with whom when we get to the bad news. But here's two things that she said that I think are really, really salient and I classify as good news for exactly the reason that you just said. So first she says, a very common misconception relates to how and when children tell. People think that children would tell right away and that they would tell everything that happened to them. In reality, children often keep this secret for years, sometimes into their adulthood, sometimes forever. And they may or they may not tell everything. They may partially disclose to see how people are going to react. I'll tell you the least embarrassing thing first, and I'm going to see whether you get mad at me or whether you're going to help me. And then if I get a positive response, I may tell some more. So first, I thought that was a really, really positive statement in the context of child victims of sexual assault. And we're talking about a girl who was 15 at the time of these allegations. And then later in the same interview, she says she's talking about how churches, not the Catholic Church, but how churches should deal with issues of sexual abuse that are brought to the attention of the pastor. And she says, unequivocally, I strongly recommend that the senior pastor not be assigned to counsel the alleged offender. This is because as the senior pastor, you are the figurehead of the church. If the congregation is seeing the interaction between you and the alleged offender, it is going to send the wrong signal. It is going to send the signal that you do not believe the victim, and therefore the church should not believe the victim. Ministering to the alleged offender should be done very privately, and all parties should understand what is being done, and someone should be assigned to the accused if the victim is also part of the church. So, again, I think those are really, really positive signs, really positive statements. You ready for the black cloud?
All right, lay it on me.
Yeah, so this interview was with the Foundations Baptist Fellowship International, and in the measured legal tone that you expect from this podcast, I am going to tell you they are wackaloons. They are young earth creationists. They are a far right-wing, crazy Christian organization. And in that interview, I went on right-wing radio, right? Like you can give interviews to people. In the interview, she says, it is important to understand that demographically, sexual offenders are about the same as the general population when it comes to having religious preferences. In fact, they look like us, end quote. Right. So, now maybe she's just happened to do an interview with a far right young earth creationist, right wing pro Trump outfit. And maybe she just happened to be kind of sucking up to the interviewer. I do that when I do press interviews. That's bad. And, you know, it the entire context.
I don't follow. Didn't she say, wasn't she just trying to say that it sounded to me like she was arguing against the idea that religious people wouldn't abuse people.
Oh, yeah. No. She is. What I mean is when she says they look like us, that strongly suggests to me that she considers herself aligned with the FBFI, with this far right extreme religious group.
Gotcha.
And she has been the person that her camp has trotted out to endorse her is Maricopa County Attorney Bill Montgomery. And that dude seems pretty tied to Joe Arpaio.
I was going to say, recognize Maricopa County. Huh?
Yep. And George Soros spent $2 million to try and get him defeated in 2016, unsuccessfully. Can't find out too much more beyond that, but I know that this is an actual example of the looming specter of George Soros out there. If he spent $2 million to defeat this guy, that suggests some pretty rough things. So, look, we're gonna have to see. I do not, on balance, for voices that are out there, this is not. I could imagine a lot worse. It's why I'm glad we led with the positive. We'll know by the time this airs.
How does someone in her position even begin to do this? Like, I don't understand what her job would be. Like a senator, they've got their angle. They think that they're going to represent their constituents a certain way. Maybe, you know, if they're Republican, they're kind of trying to poke holes in the theory. But like, how does she decide? You know, if you were appointed to this unprecedented thing, what would you do? What are you trying to do in these questions? I'm really puzzled by this.
Yeah. So two separate questions there. I will tell you what she is there to do, and what she is there to do is to cross-examine Dr. Ford. Right. It that is very, very clear. That's why they have her there. That's why they want it to be a woman. That there was significant brushback. Again, didn't hurt them politically at the time, but certainly the literature and it made it into law reviews, the treatment of Anita Hill at the hands of former Republican turned Democrat Arlen Specter was something that was noted at the time, and Republicans want to avoid that. So she will be there to ask leading questions of Dr. Ford that are designed. This woman is a career prosecutor. She's going to be good at it, and she is going to try and poke holes in the story. What will be interesting to me is whether she treats Kavanaugh like a direct witness, right? Whether she reads from the script or whether she undertakes a similar approach with Kavanaugh's story. I know where I would put my chips, because I don't think Mitch McConnell would orchestrate giving her the microphone if he wasn't 100% confident of what was going to come out. But we're in uncharted territory here. So that's another thing to be on the lookout for, is she engaging in cross-examination of Dr. Ford and direct examination of Brett Kavanaugh, or is there an effort at impartiality? We'll look.
Craziness. All right. Well, we'll see. Let's talk about our good friend, Michael Avenatti, who Andrew was one of the first. I mean, I guess the LA Times had the scoop back when it was talking about his kind of financial, awkwardness and questionable ethics. But I think you kind of raised the alarm a little bit on this guy. And I got to say, I'm just not an Avenatti fan anymore personally. And I don't know if you saw this, but anyone who questioned him on Twitter, I mean, one of the women I follow on Twitter just questioned this idea that he's kind of using this accuser as a big, reality show reveal. And the way he's talking about it is just kind of icky. And he just went off on her in a way that's like, oh, you kind of confirmed that you're not a big ally of women. You're kind of just reacting in a defensive, in my opinion, kind of narcissistic way. So I'm not a big Avenatti fan, but what is your take on all this? Avenatti mess.
We went through Avenatti's shady at best business dealings on episode 181. I did see that exchange that he's, blocked several prominent women on Twitter for, as far as I can tell, asking questions. And let's add on top of that, Michael Avenatti has stated that he intends to run for president. Right. He's a joke candidate. There is no way,
I hope he's a joke.
Look, Mike, if he does, he will do it under what many of us thought Donald Trump was doing and what, Newt Gingrich was. Right. He will do it to fundraise and promote some book that he's writing. Right. Like, he will do it as a grifter. There is zero chance that he will be a serious candidate for the Democratic nomination for president in 2020.
Ooh, mark those words, everybody. Yeah. Andrew was wrong segment coming in 2 years.
There we go. And so, look, like, these are precisely the kinds of circumstances under which somebody's representations would be suspect. He has also said that he represents multiple women. That, again, we've talked about this before. I suppose it's theoretically possible, but it would be very, very difficult to avoid conflicts of interest while representing multiple women, ostensibly with claims against Brett Kavanaugh. Right. So, that makes me highly suspicious.
So are you calling BS on that claim, or are you saying that he shouldn't be doing it?
Well, I don't know. I'm saying if I'm saying that the statement causes me to doubt the veracity of his other statements. Now, on the flip side, I will say that his first client who has come forward is Julie Swetnick. We're going to link her signed sworn affidavit in the show notes. It is disturbing. The allegations in it, they are significantly more, well, I'll link it. Folks can decide for themselves. And I should add that, when you sign an affidavit, you are signing it under penalties of perjury. You know, that I think would add weight on the other side of the coin. We also know that Michael Avenatti sent a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Chuck Grassley has confirmed that he has spoken with Avenatti, that he has investigated the matter. So they took this seriously. And that's all we know for right now. I guess the last thing I would say, that I would add into the, sort of the entire package is we've started that the rhetoric coming out of the Kavanaugh camp is starting to become preposterous, right? Like, so for example, these allegations focus on high school drinking. Right. And that's why Kavanaugh would say, well, I have never been blackout drunk. And, you know, I was a virgin until college and, you know, all of that stuff.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcohol. What is that word you're using? I don't know that I. Yeah. No, I don't think I've ever used that.
I think I'm going to link the New York Times today had a photo of Brett Kavanaugh's senior yearbook photo. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Probably.
And I may use it as the show graphic. 100
Keg Club or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It that is the, you know, the 100 Kegs or Bust Club and the Beach Week Ralph Club - biggest contributor, right? If Brett Kavanaugh's argument is I did not drink alcohol in high school, or I did not drink alcohol to excess in high school, that's a very stupid thing for him to be saying right now in light of the obvious observable evidence.
It's almost like he's some sort of liar.
Kind of, yeah. That's really weird, isn't it? That his statements, when viewed in context, seem to lack indicia of reliability.
Full of clown horn, I guess, is another way of putting it.
full of clown horn. So, you know, I would be very, very reluctant. And I think the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee are going to be very reluctant to pin anything on the behavior of Michael Avenatti, because if you're a career politician, you recognize this kind of guy. And you do not want to be Dianne Feinstein or Kamala Harris or Richard Blumenthal or any of these folks and go, at any point in time, a showboating trial lawyer with questionable ethics could pull the rug out from under me. That would be my advice if I were Dianne Feinstein's LA. So
I saw someone else tweet like, hey, to the alleged victim, I don't remember her name, but they're just like, find another lawyer. Can you just get a different lawyer? Like, is that, would you recommend that as well? If she's listening?
Yes.
Would that be your, what would be your advice, Andrew, to the,
that would be my advice. And look, like, that would be my advice if I were her lawyer, right? Like, because what you want, like the person you want representing you right now is somebody with experience before the Senate Judiciary Committee, right? There are a handful of those folks. Go out, get Ted Olson to represent. I know he charges like $1,600 an an hour, but like, yeah, you know, he takes some pro bono cases. Get somebody who has been there, who can steer you through this process. You don't get a trial lawyer, right? Like, and again, you know, we've been through it, right? Like, he's done some smart stuff. He's a smart guy, right? I'm a smart guy, yeah, but like, you know, get somebody with relevant experience in the area where in
which or hire Andrew. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say it. Hire Andrew. That would be a huge boon to the show. So
it would be good for the show. Maybe not great for the future of our country, but you know, we'll.
I don't care. I care about the show.
there we go. Vote. Thomas has said,
I'm not a barred attorney like some of us. I don't have ethics to, you know, whatever. Yeah, I care about my show. That's what I care about. Okay. Well, that's Avenatti. Yeah. We'll see. So I guess my question about that then is, nobody's testifying, right? They aren't letting anybody from this batch of allegations testify?
Not so far as we know, right? As of this recording, the only folks who are scheduled to testify are Dr. Ford and the recall of Brett Kavanaugh, and then the vote is scheduled for Friday. So that's another thing to keep your eyes open. I don't know that I would anticipate that that's going to change.
They're just going to muscle this damn thing through. They're going to aren't they? I mean, aren't they going to do exactly what they did with Anita Hill? Just, you know, have him come on after. Oh, I am insulted. I can't believe we even acknowledge this. And then I can't believe we even acknowledged this. And then all the Republicans will just say, oh, good enough for me. And then,
you know, yes. I mean, to two things, right? So look, I certainly think that's the attempted playbook, but you know, number one, we don't know what Dr. Ford's testimony will be. And number two, you know, remember how we started the episode? Clarence Thomas was widely believed in a different time at the conclusion of those hearings. And Kavanaugh is not widely believed at the moment. And I think with really good reason. So I still think I agree with you, right? The show is a big rain cloud, and I agree that's still the most likely outcome. But I don't know that it has to follow the same course. So we'll all be watching with the same level of interest as everybody listening to the show.
Yeah, you had to schedule a really cool debate for right when this was happening, didn't you? Couldn't you have foreseen? Andrew was wrong, everybody, in his scheduling. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Finally, I guess, final bullet point for Andrew. Always takes you a long time to get through these bullet points, but it's all good info. What about Feinstein and her approach here of trying to slow it down?
Yeah, no, that just worth noting, and I'm going to link in the show notes that Dianne Feinstein has sent a letter essentially saying that we should put the Kavanaugh hearings on hold. It's how I wanted to wrap up this segment, because it brings us full circle back to point number one, to remember that, you know, that's what the opposition is asking for at this point, right? Not a vote against Kavanaugh, all we're asking for at this point is, hey, let's slow things down. Let's get all the documents out. Let's conduct an investigation. Let's figure out if this is true or not. What's the hurry? What's the rush? Let's do our constitutionally mandated job. So, you know, and the question is that enough to shake two Republican senators loose? Right now, I'd bet against it, but, you know, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I think they yeah, all right. Well, I won't. There's so much more I can say. I mean, they have this worldview. These Republicans seem to have a worldview. And a lot of people that were giving me pushback on my SIO last week, it's like, if a person is able to sexually assault someone without photos or video, then they just can get away with it. Like, that seems to be the worldview of these people. So there's nothing that anybody could say, because that would just be, he said, she said, doesn't matter. You know, I don't understand how they think it's supposed to work. Like, they're taking their view to the conclusion, you know, to the natural conclusion. How it seems inescapable that your view must be, if you can assault someone without other witnesses, then you're fine. I don't see any way around it.
And I mean, like, what I thought you did a really masterful job on SIO. So, I mean, the what's the defense? Because the argument that follows up on that is, and we're talking about a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
and we're talking
exactly.
about somebody who has a lifetime appointment to the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Right now, that's not going away.
Right.
Right. Like we are not talking
about
putting somebody in jail.
My favorite thing is when they say his life is going to be ruined. His life is going to be ruined by only being a federal judge forever. That's
life
ruining.
And let's be clear, right? One of the most important and influential judges in the country, right? Like, I mean, he sits on the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. That's a judgeship I could never, I would love to have. And he will retain that no matter what happens here.
Life ruined.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we've covered what we can for now. We're all going to be tuning in again. We'll see if Andrew's travel allows some sort of recording if necessary. We'll stay tuned, everybody, specifically on Patreon, especially. And speaking of Patreon, final segment for the show today.
He who questions training only trains himself at asking questions.
What?
Question from Teresa Gomez. Love Teresa Gomez. Great supporter, listener, and wiki contributor, right? Teresa Gomez asks, in the situation where someone represents themselves and they call themselves as a witness, can they just monologue on the stand? Is there a time limit or guidelines for this? This came up while reading Denial. But the trial is located in the UK and this idiot just talked for a while. So I love this. This is like old timey OA question that we've seen, because of this dumpster fire we haven't gotten to in a while. I like the change of pace there from Teresa. So what's the answer? You represent yourself and you call yourself as a witness. Can you just filibuster for eternity?
I actually had to research this question because I have never faced a party in open court who was pro se, who was representing themselves. I have litigated against pro se litigants, but all of those cases were decided on the pleadings, right? I was able to successfully move to dismiss the plaintiff's filed complaint. As it turns out, there are a bunch of cases about this. And the leading case is a case called United States versus Nivica. And essentially what it says is that the trial judge has the option to require the defendant to who represents himself to put on testimony in the form of question and answer. Right. And so in that case, the judge said, to the defendant, you have to ask yourself questions. You have to say, Mr. Wellington, what is your name? And then you can say, my name is Mark Wellington. You cannot get up on the stand and simply narrate your story. Now,
he's like, we will allow, though, if you want to do a ventriloquist routine, we will allow that. That is acceptable.
Yeah, if you could get Bob the Dummy from Soap to it would be amazing to watch this unfurl. I should add, I did some quick research. So that's the case law, right? The court can require that instead of putting on narrative testimony, which is Teresa's, just get up and ramble for a while, that you enter your testimony in the appropriate way.
Well, you could ask yourself an open-ended question, couldn't you? Like, Mr. Smith, please ramble for five hours.
Then,
okay.
But then the judge can confine you to answer the question, right? Which, by the way, would be a glorious instruction from the bench, right? Like,
oh my gosh. This is, we could make a better legal comedy that technically was all true. Your Honor, permission to hold by treat myself as a hostile
witness.
It would be
amazing. So I should add the default in every court that I could find and in lawyers who have been opposite pro se defendants. I called a friend of mine, and in every one of these cases, the judge has just sort of let let the pro se defendant narrate, give narrative testimony, just kind of ramble on the stand. But I gotta tell you, I get why this was a First Circuit decision, but there are a bunch in a bunch of different in a bunch of different circuits. This is just the one that's cited all the time, possibly because it's written in a very entertaining fashion. But I get why the First Circuit held that way, right? Like, as a lawyer, I'm sitting there going, yeah, if I'm on the other side, I need to know whether I'm going to object to his testimony or not. And if this guy just says, so, Your Honor, the first thing I did was I was talking to Sandy, and well, she said, and you know, and then you've gotten it out, and I've got to jump up and object on the grounds of hearsay. And if you're required to frame it as a question, you know, Mr. Wellington, did you ever speak with Sandy Richards? Well, then, you know, now I know hearsay's coming. And so I can lodge my objection in an efficient manner before the jury hears it.
Wow. I love it.
The side effect would be turning the trial into a farce. But I'm willing to do that. By God, I'm willing to.
You're willing to do it. That's awesome. I love the question. I love the answer. And you know what? While we're at it, I had another bit of just tiny, happy opening arguments news to kind of offset this everything happening. We do a Tuesday night pub trivia pretty much every week. And I have to tell you, an answer to this week's question, one of this week's questions was it was two-parter. It was, who was the second woman on the Supreme Court, and which previous NFL player did she take? And I'm pleased to report that Byron Wizerwhite was an answer to a trivia question, got us 2 points on that one. So just goes to show, Andrew, opening arguments can
that
be useful.
Is by far the just best thing positive. We've ever done, helping Thomas Smith and friends succeed at bar trivia since 2016.
There you go. We won. Yeah. We won the week. We won the month. It was but being able to tell my friend Byron Wizerwhite. I'll never not know that, because Andrew frequently brings up Byron Wizerwhite. So that was awesome. And only two teams got it. I asked him afterwards, like, how many people knew
that?
Byron
that makes me sad because I have long, ever since you told me that you play trivia on Tuesday night, I want to fly out and go to the bar and play trivia with you. Unless they have like an 80s music, you know, category, then good.
They
so
do.
I'm not totally superfluous yet.
They have at least one question is your terrible, clown-horning terrible 80s music. So you'll be great for that. I can't wait. Well, we would be too good, though. This is not Andrews, you know. This is not a room full of Andrews playing trivia. This is normal civilians. So I thought that was fun, and I wanted to bring it up. So that's all the good news we have for you. No, actually, we have some more good news, because we've got to thank our top patrons, our all-time greats, our Hall of Famers over on patreon.com/law, who are getting, by the way, a lot of awful movies very soon. They're getting that Q&A. The Q&A thread is up, so go ask your questions. Go vote on each other's questions. And stay tuned. We might be able to do a bonus recording for you for this Kavanaugh thing. We'll let you know. So stay tuned on patreon.com/law. Plenty of good reasons to be on there. Of course, the ad-free episodes, each and every episode. With that said, we've got to thank our top patrons. And we begin with Registry Matters, Zach Fisher, Make Cybertron Prime Again, Fettuccine Alfredos, # Believe Survivors. That's a good one there. I agree. Jurisprudence Fetishist Gets Off on Technicality. I love that one. Rebecca Brennice. Brent, something like that. HOTUS and the Taint Team 2020. Brian Studwell. Ryan Null. Blank Boxman. LiveBaseballScorecards.com. Kurt Robinson. Kiwa Valley Exports for Australian Red Meat and Craft Beer. Ooh, yummy. Don't pardon me, I'll pardon myself. Poseidon is 9/10 of Maritime Law. Applejack is Best Pony. Claire Derbois is easier to pronounce than Quisatz Haderach. Healing Elementals on Etsy. Promo code OpenArgs for 10% off. Sam, Milo Meadsong, the Halfling Bard, and SIU3L. The other Michael Cohen. Getting Off Podcast. Join your labor union. Together we bargain, alone we beg. Conservatism is a mimetically transmitted disease. Your Honor, permission to argue my case baseball style.
I have no idea.
What is that? I love it. Starry Decisis from the top rope, brother. I believed Anita Hill then, and I believe these other brave women. Good message there. Mike the Intactivist. James Cole is spending a year dead for tax reasons. Rob Schreck, printable guns, which print and fire ever smaller gun printing guns. Brian Upshaw's last chance for profit prison. Dalen Lee Samus Grix. Buttercup's Law Cat Services. Call 831-CAT-LAW-1 to talk to a law cat today. Japan Dan, New York Times. All the clown horns fit to honk. Anonymous. No, it is Dr. Bigurius. Eric Carlson's new golf clubs. I don't totally get it, but okay. I turned myself into a pickle. I'm Pickle Rick. Save on your first Yodel Mountain Outfitters order with code OA. Still celebrating the engagement. Yay. Squint Finger. Jeremiah unironically said kids these days today and now is now old. The 70s called. They want their news back.
And thank you to unnamed senior administration official. Please be real. To This Week in News with Kevin and Benedict, great podcast. A Sail Away with Yodel Mountain Distillery Dread Cavanaugh Dark Rum. Oh, you make a dark and stormy out of that.
I think you mean a dark and stormy, yes. Daniel. But yes. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
A Rabbit Anti-Dentite. Guy Chapman has built more walls than Donald Trump. Keith Davies, wordorigins.org, your guide to legal terms from 13th century Saxony. Using my wife's Patreon to make Andrew say things since episode 186. Yeah, keep it up. The Cobra Kavanaugh. I love that one. Shout out to the OA Redditors in the politics sub. Yeah, shout out. Saul, there is so much pressure on Wednesday nights to come up with nice. Something. Big Easy Blasphemy, a string of unpronounceable characters. The TTTB co-ed cheer squad, less sexy but enthusiastic as hell. Well, that counts. Legalize the Purge. I love powdered milk. Okay. Obergefell versus Roe in a steel cage death match with special guest referee, and it says BR. I'm assuming that's Brian, but, you know, who knows? Could be anyone. Could be Brie Larson, right? I couldn't come up with anything clever this week. Rhonda the Wigged Witch Hunter. That's harder to say than you'd think. Malika Chandler. Hot spots on my dog. Soggy pants. CampQuest.org. 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 Classic. Sam Danow. Dave. Living life. Yodel Mountain High in Trump's America. President Donald J. Yeti Pubes. OA is one of the best podcasts from the standpoint of podcasts. Okay. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. Danny Baker at Combat Nonsense. Aaron Grady. Matthew Vernon. I, Andrew Torres, hereby declare my undying love for Team Wiki. I do.
You didn't need to make a name to say that we have undying love for Team Wiki.
And also to the Mod Squad. The Mod Squad.
And the Mod Squad.
Ian and Alley.
Yeah.
St. Muller, patron both saint teams. Of yodelers. Sakashite Fukasumi, his name is Rosenstein and always has been. Jim Grove, Eli Bosnick, Cooking Heath with Ramen. Mitchell, In Rod We Trust is the title of Stormy's next film. I would watch the heck out of that. Nooners, Spooners, and Hot Air Ballooners LLP. Blank Bachman versus Paul Oot the Planet cage match. Yeah, if you're not getting Lawed Awful Movies, you have no idea about that reference. Or this one, Mormon J. Fox, still one of my favorite. Everybody is going to die. Come watch TV. And as always, our top patron, our number one, our Hall of Famer, our all-time great, Conrad Michaels. None shall overthrow him, but all
and,
should try.
And Sakashite with a great, that was like a Berenstain Bears reference, I think. That's like, it's always been. Yeah, no, that's good.
Yes,
that's a good one. That was so fun.
I should point out, I want to say the Buttercup's Legal Services folks actually sent us an email with a screenshot to prove that they do in fact own phone number. So, you know, so we're not doing an 867-5309
on anybody.
Actually
call it to talk to a cat.
We're now doing on.
Is what you're saying. Well, I know what I'm doing with the rest of my day.
Apparently. Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, it is time for TTTBE.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
All right, Thomas, this is question number 95, and you have one to give. This is an evidence question, and it's short. So here you go. A defendant was charged with aggravated assault. At trial, the victim testified that the defendant beat her savagely, but she was not asked about anything said during the incident. The prosecutor then called a witness to testify that when the beating stopped, the victim screamed, "I'm dying! Don't let the defendant get away with it." Is the testimony of the witness concerning the victim's statement admissible? Answers. A. No, because it is hearsay, not within any exception. B. No, because the victim was not asked about the statement. C, yes, as a statement under belief of imminent death, even though the victim did not die. Or D, yes, as an excited
hearsay.
Utterance.
Hearsay is so hard. It's like the real property of evidence questions. Hearsay questions are always so hard for me because my common sense instincts, I don't think they're quite right. Because like common sense wise, it makes perfect sense to be like, yeah, there's somebody who saw it. Why wouldn't they obviously testify to what the somebody, you know, like testify to what you saw and what they said? But then there's all these weird hearsay rules because I guess you need to ask the victim to testify that they said, I'm dying, don't let the defendant person get away with it. So then this would be hearsay. I don't know if it's an exception. I mean, I do remember the an excited utterance thing. That was something that was... Okay, let's go through it. A, no, because it is hearsay, not within any exception. I think that's a valid option because of how hard hearsay is. I don't ever know the rules. So that's a strong contender for me. B, no, because the victim was not asked about the statement. Could also be a good one. C, yes, as a statement under belief of imminent death. That doesn't make sense to me. I've never heard of that. I'll be surprised if C is right. So I'm kind of eliminating C. D, yes, is an excited utterance. Excited utterance. That's something, but I don't know if that's this. I'm kind of leaning to... it's an excited utterance. I thought the excited utterance thing was... I feel like when we last talked about that, it was someone making a statement kind of against their interest, sort of, or like somebody on the other side. I could be wrong, but I feel like that was more what that had to do with. So I'm kind of leaning between A and B here. No, because it was hearsay, not within any exception. And B, no, because the victim was not asked about the statement. I think that I'm going to say A. Now, I think rationally, just common sense, I feel like they should be able to just testify to this. But hearsay is really hard, and I don't think I'm going to get this right. I think that if there's a no answer, the issue with B is you need to ask them about it to bring it up in cross-examination kind of thing. I think that's what it's maybe trying to get me to think. So I'm going to go with A, no, because it's hearsay, not within... friggin' A. That's hard to commit to that answer. I'm going to go with A, no, because it's hearsay, not within any exception. I have no idea. I'm not confident in this one. And I'm going to get it wrong, which means I have to get a real property question right somewhere down the line. That's my final answer.
Well, with that ringing endorsement, if you would like to play along with TTTB, you know how to do that. Just share out this episode on social media. Include the hashtag TTTB. Include the answer that you guessed, the reasons therefore, and we will pick a winner and shower that person with never-ending fame and fortune. Fame and fortune, not guaranteed. Although...
And if that submission is a video of your pet tortoise picking the answer, you automatically win. I'm just giving you
I was going to say, I think Skeptical Seventh has said that his puppy is now actually internet famous for having won TTTB. Last time I looked at that video, there were, I think, thousands of hits on the video. So, you know, you never know. You can't, like the old lottery commercials used to say, you can't win if you don't play.
Yeah, true. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for supporting the show. And keep an eye on the feed or something. We'll see what happens. This is, we'll watch Thursday's testimony with you guys and see what we think. So see you very soon.
Yep. You betray the law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is produced with the help of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, production assistant, Natalie Newell, and our unofficial researcher, Magpie. A special thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Natalie, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, and Emily Waters. And also thanks to Thomas Smith, who wrote and produced all of the amazing music you hear, which is used with his permission.
Gee, Zachary Truwelliger, what a clown horn of a week.